All right, I think that's enough of a nod to Humboldt County time, and we can get started. My name is Mihaela, and this is the Redwood Coast Energy Authority Net Energy Metering webinar. Welcome, thanks for coming. So I'm just gonna take care of a little bit of housekeeping here. The webinar ID is up on the screen here. I'm going to go ahead and read it out just in case there's anybody in the call who's having a hard time getting on. So the ID is 899-6504-5329. And if you are having any technical difficulties, you can go ahead and call our tech support line, which is 707-267-7482. And with our setup for the webinar, we ask that you hold any questions that you have and add them to the Q&A dialogue box at the bottom there. Not so much the chat box. Go ahead and add things to the chat box if, for instance, there's something going haywire with the sound or things like that, things that you want to mention to us. But if you want to ask any questions, please go ahead and put that in Q&A. All right, let's get started. Excellent. So I wanted to briefly go over the agenda here. The purpose for us is to connect with solar customers, present information, and answer questions and hear feedback. And the outcomes that we're hoping for you folks, our audience members and community members, is understanding first steps for solar installation, net energy metering, and giving feedback. So we're going to start off with a quick opening, including taking a poll in just a second here. And then Mike Avcolli will be doing a presentation on So You Want to Go Solar. And then I will be presenting on the Redwood Coast Energy Authority Net Energy Metering Program and billing. And then we'll have the question and answer period at the end. Nancy, do you want to send out that poll to the folks on the line?
Yes. Let me see. I just hit save on the poll.
So we're hoping to just get some feedback from you folks. The question that we're pulling you on is, do you have a solar array already installed? And, you know, as we already went over in the agenda here, we are providing information that we intend to be useful to customers who do not yet have solar, and then also customers who do. And so we just want to get a sense of what the spread of those customers are and figure out, you know, how we can best serve you folks. So I hope you're all seeing that poll up, and we'll just have it up for another few moments or so.
Well, we are up to 94% voted, and it looks like 61% of our guests already have an array, and 28% don't, but a very positive and progressive 11% are working on it.
All right, excellent. Great, well, that's really exciting to hear. Great to see people who've got it set up and people who are taking the next steps. All right, so speaking of taking the next steps, I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic over to Mike for a presentation on going solar.
Great. Thank you, Mihaela. And I will try to now successfully transition this over to sharing my screen, while at the same time I will introduce myself. My name is Mike Avcolli. I am a project manager on the demand side management team at Redwood Coast Energy Authority. And so I work on the customer side of the electricity situation, you know, working on things like energy efficiency projects and also solar. So I do a lot of work with our public agencies via our public agency solar program. So I did have a little bit of a moment of trouble with this earlier. So can people please do use that chat if you can't see my screen right now. Mihaela, can you give me a nod that you can see it?
I can see it, but I'm seeing it in kind of minimized. So if you want to go full screen.
Maybe if I can, Yeah. What I really want to do is bring, I'm sorry. I want to bring the out of presentation mode. Sorry. Give me 1 second here to reshare my screen. Stop sharing and try to share appropriately. So that is what I want to be showing you. Is that the full slide version?
That's the winner. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you both. Or thank you, Mihaela. Thank you, everyone. So we're talking about going solar, and this is for the roughly 30% of the people who don't have solar yet. I'm in the working on it category, so maybe there's as many as 40% of us out here. And there's also information in this presentation for folks who already have solar installed at their home as well. So I hope it's interesting to the whole audience. So some of the basics that we're going to talk about are just the pieces and parts of solar. And you can see here on the roof, let me see if my cursor's not coming over to the right screen here. So on the roof, you'll see the solar panels. You'll see that power coming down to a disconnect or an inverter, I'm sorry, box number 2 on the screen. That goes over to the service panel. And then that solar power can feed over here to your appliances. And when that's not being used on site, that solar power will go back over to the grid. And so you can see 5 is the disconnect box. And number 6 is a meter that can go in 2 directions, a bi-directional meter. And that's what really allows us to have net energy metering, where when you're not using your power that your solar array is generating, it gets pushed back onto the grid. And when your house is using power and your solar array is not generating, it can go in the other direction. And so thanks to Mihaela, I have a little slide that can help us visualize that. And so you can see in this slide, the icon of the sun going over, and the arrows go from the house and the solar panels to the grid. And when the moon comes out at night, you'll see the arrows shift over from the grid to the house. So again, I'll just talk about net energy metering a little bit. You're building credits when you're overproducing and your solar array produces more electricity than your house or your business uses. And you can use those credits at nighttime or in the winter when your business or home is making less power than your site uses. And so it's a very good deal. It allows the solar customer to get the full benefit of the power that their array produces. And indeed, Mihaela will talk more about this, so I won't steal her thunder, but our CEA does buy excess generation a little better than the retail rates, and it's a very good deal for our NEM customers. So we do talk about solar. I like to just talk about some basic steps. And again, you know, this can't cover everything in one presentation, but we'll do our best to just kind of walk through some of the basics. So number 1 is consider efficiency upgrades. And again, that's there's a really good reason for that. It's just less expensive than solar. So you want to base your solar sizing on 1 year of utility data. Don't just go with a month or two. Get at least 1 year. So you know how much power your site uses over the annual cycle. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Work with local contractors. We really have a great crew of local installers, skilled people, experienced crews. So, you know, get them to come out and look at your site if you're really serious about doing this. They have a lot of resources. And learn about what you can do to get incentives or tax breaks or anything that'll help you offset some of the costs of doing these cool things. So just to go back to step 1 here and say efficiency is just a lot cheaper. This slide shows that 3 cents a kilowatt hour to save electricity through things like maybe changing light bulbs, to put in high efficiency appliances. And so the graphic there will show you some of those things. Your house building envelope can be better insulated. All those things are much less expensive, and then you are able to install a smaller solar array. And so we really want to encourage people, while solar is an exciting technology, it really is, it is my favorite technology right now to work on, but I also love doing efficiency projects, so we really want to encourage people to consider that as a first step. So then step 2, like you heard me say in my introduction to the 4 basic steps, is getting a full year of utility data. And this is a graphic of PG&E's My Energy page. And if you, PG&E will still provide your transmission and distribution service, even if you're an RCEA customer. So you can log into this and get your you need to start an account. And then you can get energy usage, your energy usage, your site-specific energy usage from this site. And so again, I encourage you to get at least 12 months of data. to base your system sizing on. Because remember, your building uses different amounts of power seasonally. And so, excuse me, this graphic shows that a little bit more. Solar works on an annual cycle. The orange bars represent solar output on a month-by-month basis. You'll see the months along the x-axis at the bottom. And so the orange bars have a big peak in the middle where it's summer, and this customer's electric use is superimposed in blue. This is a school site, so they're not using as much energy in the summer. And so this delta of orange to blue here is kind of where net energy metering comes in, where this customer can get credit for all this extra solar they produced. But this is a graphic of a system that is sized to annually over the course of a year offset all of the site's electricity. Although in some months it'll make more and some months it will make less. So step three is working with local contractors. So the image here you see on the right with the squiggly line is something called a solar pathfinder, and that helps measure shading on the site. And one thing I forgot to mention in our earlier presentation that you all are the beneficiaries of is that we at RCEA rent this tool out. So customers could come to RCEA and rent out a solar pathfinder to get a sense of whether their site is shady or not shady and how shady it is and during what months. The picture next to that is an angle finder, the angle of your roof. It's typically we see solar installed, you know, flush to the roof. So the angle of your roof or the angle of the installation will make a difference in how much solar your array will produce. So contractors and people who are looking at sizing your array want to come in and take a look at that. And the picture is, you know, just an image of what maybe a contractor could provide for you in terms of, hey, here's where the solar might go on your roof. And there are different types of contractors that are qualified to do this work. So you can be a C10 electrical contractor. You can be a C46 solar contractor. You can also be a general contractor. A B contractor can install solar. So I encourage you to get multiple quotes. You know, there's no way for us to ever know what the market will bear or what solar really costs until you go out to the market. I'll talk a little bit about that later. But finding out what at least, you know, more than one company thinks it would cost is always good for the customer. And, you know, make sure that you or your contractor is applying for all permits. These permits, systems need to be permitted to be interconnected to the grid. So that's a little bit on working with local contractors. Step four is learning about and applying for incentives. Right now for solar, solar is a pretty mature technology, which means it can kind of stand on its own economically. It's at an all-time low in price. And there are the remaining subsidy that's available is the federal government's investment tax credit. And so you can see on the slide, the investment tax credit is set to be decreasing. It's 26% for systems that are put in service this year. It means it has to be installed and interconnected to the grid by December 31st. And then that will reduce to 22% by the end of 2021. And there's no knowing whether or not that tax credit will go away. Right now, it's scheduled to go away for residential customers and be decreased down to 10% for business customers and commercial customers. So things to know about the investment tax credit: you have to have tax liability. It is not a cash refundable credit. So you have to owe the taxes to get the credit. The credit can be rolled over for 3 years. So if you had a $3,000 credit and you owe about $1,000 every year on your taxes, you could absorb that whole credit by rolling the credit over for up to 3 years. Other incentives that are available, not for solar, I'll be very clear, this is not for solar. It is for batteries, though, something that is commonly paired with solar, and we'll talk a little bit more about batteries in this talk, just a little bit. But there are cash rebates and or incentives, whichever term you want to use, but they will give you a cash back based on what type of customer you are. You know, in the broadest categories are general market customer, equity customer, and resiliency. But we could do a whole talk on that topic, but there are some incentives available for batteries. And switching over to that, I'll just talk a little bit about batteries. It was a topic of great interest for our customers in our entire region, largely because of public safety power shutoffs late last year. So things we want to think about if we are thinking about batteries, again, they're very expensive technology right now, not like solar. So backing up critical loads is important. And when we think critical, we might think refrigeration or pumps, maybe one or two lighting circuits. things that are really critical are anybody who relies on, it should be in the slide and I apologize, but if you rely on medical assistive equipment, that's a critical load. And likewise, our society has certain critical loads. You know, our wastewater and water treatment facilities, our police and fire facilities, and other things like hospitals are critical facilities as well. Those are ideal places where we can really see a benefit to having emergency backup power on site. There's also other benefits besides just backup power. When you're not in the midst of a power emergency, there are ways you can use your battery that are both for the customer's benefit and for the grid benefit. This graphic is an interesting one. I learned about it in grad school. The red curve is a typical, this is supposed to represent a typical power load curve in the state of California. You can see the time of day along the x-axis. The red curve is the glut of solar on the grid in the middle of the day in California. And people have called this the duck curve because as you get over to the right side of the curve, the load in California starts to ramp up as people are coming home from work and some air conditioner loads are still on the grid while the solar is completely off the grid. They call that the evening ramp up. And so if we can discharge our batteries and store the energy that's under that red curve, and discharge them in that green box there, that can have, that's typically, right now we're moving to time of use rates. Mihaela will talk some about that. We'll talk a little bit about it. But as we move forward, our rates will shift to where the peak period is from either 3 to 9 or 4 to 9, kind of corresponding with this green box when the solar is going away. So the customer can get benefit because they're discharging when it's the most expensive and charging when it's free or low cost from solar. And it's got good grid benefits because the grid, you know, that service of not having everybody turn on their power, but some people are turning on some batteries, can decrease that evening ramp up. So just a little bit about that. And then just a couple of pictures of systems to kind of just flesh out what I'm actually talking about, maybe a little better in pictures as well as words. So there are different system types. And this is what we came here to talk about, net energy metered grid tied solar. There's no batteries, there's no storage involved with this. You'll have solar panels on your roof. You will have this in this picture, there's a disconnect here. The inverter box is the next blue and gray box in the kind of flow chart. Another disconnect box and then your panel. And again, you'll see the meter there. Again, big message of net energy metering is power can go both ways through your meter, allowing you to take advantage of you know, running solar credits and using that energy later when the sun is not shining. And that's this is the basic system configuration. What you might say, this is what that system looks like. And again, just to tie this into the earlier talk about batteries, you'll see this photo adds some batteries down here and they're purple in the kind of bottom left quadrant of the slide. You'll see a few more devices, things like a charge controller, maybe some extra disconnects. So added complexity in this system, but you're getting the backup of emergency power when the power goes down. That's one flavor and that's kind of the simple version. And then my next slide shows a more complex version. And now this is where there's a lot of lines being drawn, a lot of different boxes. This is where the customer is wanting to use their battery system and their home power system to supply their own loads, to manage their energy, to offload their battery when power is expensive, charging when power is cheap. So the full energy management, and it gets very complicated, and these systems can be very expensive. And for the most part, that's not really the focus of today's talk, but since 60% or so of the people here already have solar, batteries may or may not be something you're thinking about. So hopefully we could just, you know, give you a little information on that. And again, there are a lot of considerations when it comes to batteries, but just a few of them on this slide are things like the allowable depth of discharge. You know, how far can you discharge your battery, or how much is actually available in your battery? How many times can you discharge and charge? One full cycle is charge and discharge. So how many times can you cycle that battery? What's the efficiency? What's its capacity? And of course, the last one on that list is what is its cost? That's really a big factor. Again, I'll just reiterate, batteries are not inexpensive at the moment. It's a technology that is seeing more interest, and I think that will change over time, but it's an important factor as you're looking at batteries. And one other part of the presentation I added is, you know, just for people who are maybe not in their residential market today, but are going to be in the residential market in the future. Maybe there are building professionals here or city officials. And so there are a few Title 24 requirements, and we will see more solar because the state is mandating solar. So there's, I think it's in 2018, it was pretty recently, there were mandatory solar ready provisions in the code. And Title 24 is the energy portion of our building code. And so Title 24 mandates that in certain situations, and you can see some of the covered occupancies, single family residences, non-residential buildings, multifamily buildings, have to have a minimum solar area dedicated to some amount of their roof being able to support a solar array, and be ready for, you know, having calculations done on that portion of the roof. And it must be shown on the plans and be documented that there's a certain portion of the roof that could, you know, withstand the loads of adding solar panels. They have to look at pathways to the main service equipment from the panel location. So that's, you know, things like, where would the conduit go? Where would the inverters go to get back to this service equipment that we know will eventually happen? And making sure that the main electric service panel is 200 amps, so that extra capacity allows solar to be installed without having to do a panel upgrade or make electrical upgrades, and they want a breaker space in that panel just reserved for solar. So those were some of the solar-ready provisions in 2020. There are solar mandatory provisions, and so you will see a big equation with some inputs, and it's not something that I can go through in this talk, but just to know that they are out there and this is being required on buildings that are permitted in 2020. And so things to remember, we're not seeing these necessarily on the landscape today. Buildings that are being built today may have been permitted under the solar ready provisions. They weren't permitted under these new solar mandatory provisions. It'll be a few years before we see this rolling out, but it is something to be aware of. So again, we'll be seeing more solar on new construction, both in residential and non-residential spaces. So then I mentioned cost earlier. A lot of people ask. I do talk to a lot of our customers and our ratepayers about going solar. I work with a lot of our municipal and public agencies about going solar. You know, what is the cost of solar is a very common question. And so, you know, one thing that's very common in the industry is to use a simple metric, and it kind of simplifies things down to dollars per watt. The dollars per watt metric would be an all installed cost, you know, total everything from the rails and the inverters, mounting it on the roof, the labor, the permit. What's the total cost of this installation? It can be framed in the dollars per watt, and it is common that way. And so that's based on the DC nameplate rated capacity of the solar panels. So I'll just give a little example. If your solar panels are 300 watt panels, then the nameplate rated capacity is 300 watts. And if they're called 300 watts on the sticker, that's what we're talking about. That's a 300 watt panel. If you have 10 of those, you have 3000 watts, and that's also known as 3 kilowatts. And I use that number because in my example down below, I refer back to a 3 kilowatt system. But again, the dollars per watt metric has a range. There's no one price because there's no one situation that fits all circumstances. You may need electrical upgrades, you may need trenching to get back to your service panel. There could be 100 different things that could cause your cost to be different than someone else's, but there's typically a range. We see solar going for about $3 to $6 per watt. And again, I wanna be really clear, this is not batteries. This is not something where we're gonna see massive electrical upgrades to add an EV car in the future. This is just a simple, straightforward solar installation. But it's fair to say that that's the price these days. But, you know, I've also seen $2 a watt and $10 a watt, and those jobs all had very good reasons for being priced the way they were. But if we went back to our, you know, 10 300 watt panels, 3000 watts, 3 kilowatts, and we just use the $5 a watt price, kind of a middle ground there, we'd say that system costs $15,000. So that can help. It's a hard question to answer, but I didn't want to dodge the question, so I gave it my best. And I think that about gets me to the end of my presentation. So with that, I will just thank everyone for attending tonight. I know it's hard to come out at 5:30 and, you know, be interested in solar, but I really appreciate you doing that. And I'll ask maybe Nancy and or Nish if if there are questions to answer at this time, or we can just wait until Mihaela finishes her section to answer questions.
I think we're good to continue.
Excellent. Then again, I thank you for your time, and I'm going to turn it back over to Mihaela, who's going to take our presentation from here and talk to, and I think speak to a lot of questions that our current solar customers have. So this is going to be really useful for, I think, the large majority of the people who probably are interested in how to read their net energy metering bill and understanding that process better. So again, with that, I'll turn it over to Mihaela. Give you my screen back.
Thanks, Mike. Excellent. All right, let me just pull up screen share here. Okay. So, briefly, my name again is Mihaela, and I'm the Account Services Manager for the Community Choice Energy Program, which is one of the programs that Redwood Coast Energy Authority provides. And I'm one of the people that, if you have questions about solar or just generally about your electricity service account, I'm one of the people to help you with that. But today we're talking about net energy metering, and this is a program that we're really proud of. And this has been an excellent year for it. We had 306 more net energy metering customers this year, up from last year. We're really excited to see people installing. And I imagine that some of the folks on the call here today are included in this statistic. So I want to start briefly by giving some explanation about who we are and what we do with regard to your electricity service. So Redwood Coast Energy Authority is a governmental agency. We are a local government. Basically, we're the energy department for all of the local cities here in Humboldt County and the county and the water district. And so we have representatives from each of those governments on our board, which govern us. So we're not for profit, and we're public, and we're looking out for the public's good. So in 2017, RCA took over the generation portion of electricity service from PG&E. However, PG&E still provides the delivery service. So that means that they still take care of, you know, the physical infrastructure, the lines and the wires that get the energy to your home and business. So what we can see here is that, generally speaking, generation charges are about 40% of your typical electricity bill, and that is more or less the same for net energy metering customers as well. And then even with our service, you're still receiving the bill from PG&E, which includes our charges on it, and you're still paying PG&E for their delivery charges, which tends to be around 60% of the cost of the bill. What we're talking about are NEM program today. So if you start a net energy metering account, you put solar on your home, and you're interconnected to the grid with PG&E, you will be automatically enrolled in our program. So once you do that, you don't have to give us a call or anything. You'll just be ready to go. For our generation charges, we do monthly billing. So that means that if you produce more energy than you use in a given month, then we will provide you a credit that will roll over to the next month. If you use more energy than you produce, we'll just ask you to pay for that energy in that particular month. And so, like I said, if you do produce a credit that rolls over month to month, that's a little bit different from the way that PG&E does their billing for their net energy metering program. And so this includes the delivery charges that all of our shared customers are still are required to pay. They do what we call a true-up. So that's a yearly assessment of all of the charges and the credits that the customer has incurred throughout that year. So looking at everything that you used, everything that you produced, and then at the end of the year saying, okay, this is how much you owe, and or this is how much you created above what you produced. I'm sorry, what you used. We like to do the monthly billing because it allows customers to have a clearer sense of what they're using and what they're producing, so they don't get caught off guard at the end of the year. But I think it's really important to note that those two different approaches are happening at the same time. For excess generation, if a customer produces more than they use, RCA pays the retail generation rate for the excess production plus an extra penny per kilowatt hour. Now, when I say the retail rate, that means that what we would be charging you if you were using more than you produced, we will pay you that amount plus an extra penny per kilowatt hour. And I'm a little bit vague about how much that actually means because it depends on what rate you're on. And some customers might be on the kind of older style rate where energy costs the same amount any time of day. But the vast majority of net energy metering customers are on time of use. And that means that energy costs different amounts depending on what time of day it is. And for some of the rates, what day of the week it is, and also what season it is. So there's some variability there. And I really encourage you to know what your rate schedule is and know what the peaks, part peaks, off peaks are, so that you can be, you know, hoping to produce energy at the highest peak amount, and then really be focusing on using your energy when energy is the cheapest, and at least trying to get it out of the peak periods. So for excess generation, RCA pays you out at the retail rate plus the extra penny per kilowatt hour. So given that, you know, there's all these different rate schedules, on average, that pencils out to about 11 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, just to compare this to PG&E's program for customers who are fully with their service, so they're also taking generation service from them, they're paying their customers out at the wholesale rate. And so on average, that's 3 cents per kilowatt hour. So I just point this out because I want to show that RCA really encourages our solar customers to produce electricity and to sell it back to the grid so that we can then provide that to other customers who don't have solar on their homes and businesses. So if you are a customer who produces significantly more energy than you use, if you have a credit of $100 or more come May, then we will cash you out. So what we've done in the past is we would look at all the customers who have a credit of $100 or more, and we would send out a letter saying, hey, do you want this money now or do you want it to keep rolling over? But this year we decided that we would just say, here is a check, go enjoy yourself. So that'll be starting next year. If you've already been with us for a little while, that is a bit of a change, but I think that'll work out nicely. So this year, like I said, we've had an excellent year for solar. We were able to offer generation credit payouts to 492 customers here in Humboldt County, and that amounted to $176,000. We're really grateful that we get to do that this year, particularly because it seems like, you know, there's a lot of people who can use that money right now. All right, so I want to take a little bit of time to just go over a typical billing cycle for a residential customer. So this isn't specific to a net energy metering customer, but I think it's really important to understand some of the underlying factors in one's electricity billing. And I know this is maybe not the most exciting topic, but I think that it really answers some questions, and it's worth thinking about a little bit. So this is a yearly billing for the typical residential customer here in Humboldt County. So we see that the customer's bills are the most expensive in winter, so January and December. Now, I think that makes sense. Most of us recognize that we are a community that is a bit chillier than other parts of California. So we're using the most energy in the winter. And as opposed to other parts of California, we're not using quite as much in the summer. So we have our highest bills in the winter. We see that they are kind of stepping down as there's more solar insulation and people are, you know, there's more light in general. We're using lights less and they're warmer, so they're using less heat until we get to April. Now, in April, not only is it, you know, warmer and lighter, but the California Climate Credit is applied. And that's about a $30 credit. And oftentimes, this really throws people off because in April, they often see it and they're like, oh, this is how my bill should be. It should be this low watermark. And then May rolls around and customers aren't receiving the climate credit and summer rates kick in. Now, electricity is just more expensive in the summer. You know, we mentioned before, most other parts of California are hot and use a lot of AC. And so there's a huge amount of electricity demand in the summer. So people often have kind of a bigger bill in May, and this juxtaposition can be kind of gruesome to some customers. We see the bill level out a bit in the summer. And then once again, in October, the California Climate Credit is applied. And then we have this big rise in billing from October, when we had that climate credit, and we also often have really nice mild weather, to November, when things start to get chillier, people might be putting out more decorations or things like that, and there's no climate credit. And so we see a kind of a big jump in billing costs, and folks are often reasonably frustrated with that. So if there's confusion in your billing, I recommend that you take a look at some of those factors, and that might help with some of the explanation there. So now moving on to specifically net energy metering billing. And once again, this is a yearly billing cycle to get kind of a sense of what's going on. So in this graphic, we have three different parts of the billing, three different pieces of billing here. We have green for generation. Now that's the Redwood Coast Energy Authority piece of the puzzle. And then we have blue, which is the minimum delivery charge, the connection charge. So this is what PG&E charges all of their customers at the very minimum. So this is true, you know, if you go on vacation and you turn everything off, PG&E is still going to charge you this amount, even, you know, not specifically for NEM customers, but just to make sure that you are paying for the possibility of being connected to the grid, that you're still paying your fair share for this kind of connection. So net energy metering customers are charged this on a monthly basis. It's around $10 a month. It's a daily charge, so it just depends on how many days there are in the month, what the exact price is. And then in yellow here, we have the delivery charge. And this is the true-up that we were talking about before. So you can see that it's a little bit of a larger amount. You know, the December bill ends up being one of the higher ones, because all of those credits and debits get netted out at that point. And so a typical customer, a typical net energy metering customer, uses a little bit more than they produce. That often is the most economical system to get. So the way that we have it here is things are still pretty spread out, even though there is that larger bill come December. And let me just clarify, December is not the true up for everyone. This is just for the ease of having it at the end of the year there. But your true up will be the month that you interconnected your system. So it'll essentially be the anniversary for when your system was interconnected. So looking at this, in January, things are maybe pretty chilly. Haven't had a lot of solar insulation. You know, the days are shorter, people are using a lot of energy. So a typical customer may have one of their largest bills around then. But pretty quickly, the customer is starting to build up net energy metering credits with RCA. And so we see the green line getting smaller and smaller until May, when the customer is not only netting themselves out for that month, but they're also building credits. So that's what these negatives are here. The customer is building up generation credits, which are rolling over month to month to month. And so even when we're getting into September and October, and even November, the customer is probably not creating a huge amount of electricity through their solar panels, but they're able to draw on their earlier credits that they had banked in the summer. And so it's not until December that we start to see the customer having to pay generation costs. So now we're going to get into how to read your net energy metering bill document. So if you are a customer who's already been interconnected to the grid with your solar array, you should have been sent this in the mail from us. And then also when you registered, we sent a version of this as well. So I highly recommend that you spend a little bit of time with it with your bill in hand. You know, you can kind of look at things side by side. But we're going to go over it today. All right, so looking, starting here on page one, this is just, you know, the first page of your bill where everything's pretty generalized. We've got the account number up top. That's always a nice thing to have on hand if you're giving us a call or PG&E a call, so we can look at your account. And then two, we have the electric delivery charges from PG&E. So that's the minimum delivery that we were talking about. If this bill happened to be the customer's true-up month, then that's what we would see the true-up amounts as well. But it's not, so the customer just has the, you know, close to $10 fee. Number three, we have the Redwood Coast Energy Authority charges. This customer doesn't have any charges with us. It's a bill from August, so they've been producing a bunch of energy, and they don't owe us anything. And we'll talk a little bit more about the specifics of that coming up in a bit here. And then we've got the total amount due, which is just the sum of these previous charges. Another thing that I want to mention, and this is more PG&E related, but I think it's just really important, is this box below here, your net energy metering account summary. Oftentimes, customers can be a bit blindsided by the results of the yearly true-up. They're paying that $10 a month, and so they're feeling like they're probably paying everything that needs to be paid, and they're not going to have a true-up. And oftentimes that's not the case, especially in the first year when customers are not totally clear on how much energy they're producing versus how much energy they're using. Or if something happens, like your panels are damaged or, you know, something else goes wrong and you're really not paying attention to it. And so customers can be a bit blindsided by the total amount due at the end of the year. So I really recommend that you keep an eye on this this box here, because it'll give you a sense of what your year-to-date estimated NEM true-up will be for PG&E. And this customer, they're a star student. They don't have any charges building up at this point. But, you know, very likely most customers will have that building up, and it's nice to know about that ahead of time. All right, now moving on to page five. We're starting off with the service agreement ID. This is just a little bit more specific than the account number. So this is also a nice thing to have on hand, especially if you happen to have multiple accounts or maybe multiple meters or locations. One thing to note is that this number does change when you set up net energy metering. So this will be different from previous bills. Minimum delivery charge, we talked about this a little bit before. So once again, that's that per day charge. And then this is the total. And so this is just summing up everything we got here so far. Another thing that I really want to emphasize is the consumption and generation numbers on the side of the page here. And this is on multiple pages in your PG&E bill. But it's a really excellent place to start, especially if you have questions about your bill. Because what they're saying is, this is the energy consumption and the energy production that PG&E has seen from you in the last month. And I want to mention that that does not include if you are both producing and using energy at the exact same time. So if the sun's shining and you turn on the TV, that energy that you're both producing and using at the same time isn't going to be exported to PG&E, so it's not going to show up on the bill. And so if you have some confusion because the information that you're getting from your inverter is different from what you're seeing on the PG&E bill, then that might be the missing component. So it's just another piece of the puzzle when you're kind of sussing things out. But anyways, so this information here is everything that PG&E is visible to PG&E. So we've got the consumption, you know, what you use probably at night, that kind of thing, and then what you generated over, you know, what you were using at that exact moment, and then we've got the net usage. And so that's going to be the per kilowatt hour, the kilowatt hour amount that we'll see used throughout the bill here. So moving on to page 6, this is the page where the charges and or credits for the PG&E side of things is broken down. So some of the key things that are happening in the little 8 box here is PG&E is showing you how much of that 92 kilowatt hour production was happening in the peak and off-peak periods. And so that's broken down. And since these are negatives here, you are being credited at that amount. And I want to mention that these rates, you know, for the peak one here, we're seeing it's almost 40 cents per kilowatt hour, and then 32 cents per kilowatt hour. This is the PG&E total rate. Now, honestly, this is kind of confusing. I wish they didn't do it like this. But basically, what PG&E assumes when they're doing this calculation is that you are a PG&E customer for generation also. And then later on, they kind of take out that amount so that we can put in our charges. And we'll go through that step by step. But I just wanted to mention that's why that's such a large amount there, or a large rate, that is. And then number 9, we have the non-bypassable charges. So these are charges that the state of California wants to make sure that everybody pays, even if you're a net energy metering customer. They don't want you to be able to net out for those charges. They want to make sure that everybody contributes. And so these tend to be public purpose programs. And you know, they're a really excellent benefit to the community at large. And then we have the generation credit. So as I mentioned before, PG&E up top in box 8 is assuming that you are not with a program like RCEA and that they're providing the generation. But down here in the generation credit, they're saying, oh, actually, we understand that you are with Redwood Coast Energy Authority for the generation portion of your electricity bill. So we're going to give you a credit for that amount. However, because this customer is, in this instance at least, producing more than they are using. What above in number 8 would normally for most customers be a charge is a credit. And so the generation credit is now basically a charge. So it's just really kind of flipping the signs so that the numbers work out in the end. It's fairly confusing, and I apologize for that. But unfortunately, that's the system that we're set up with right now. And then number 11, we have the power charge and difference adjustment. So once again, this is normally a charge, but because we're in opposite land, this normal charge is now a credit. So basically, PG&E went into a lot of long-term, fairly expensive contracts, particularly at the beginning of the movement for renewable energy, which is a fantastic thing because it galvanized the renewable energy industry. And so, you know, as Mike mentioned, we're in a moment where solar is incredibly cheap compared to just a few years ago. And so these early market adopters like PG&E paved the way for that. But because they have these legacy contracts that are relatively expensive, the state of California wants to make sure that customers that leave their generation service are still paying their fair share for that, for those old contracts. And so that other customers who haven't left their service aren't left holding the bag. So that's what the PCIA is. And then the franchise fee, this is just a fee that is a general fee that everybody has to pay for PG&E to have the rights to use the public streets for their electricity and their gas usage. And then we have the total here. And so this customer is doing excellent. They've got a negative total or credit. And so because this is just the PG&E charges, this is going to be added to their kind of running total for their true up. All right, so we're moving over to page 7. Now this is a page that's specifically for RCEA. So we've got the rate schedule here. Once again, I really recommend that you are very comfortable with your rate schedule. You know when energy is the most, when it's the cheapest, and all those details. That really helps in general and particularly with NEM. All right, so number 15, we've got the generation breakdown. So once again, this is just showing how much electricity credits are during which peak or off-peak period. So we've got off-peak, it looks like not only did this person produce a bunch of energy, but they also produced a bunch on-peak, which is an excellent value to them. And then 16, we've got the net generator bonus. So that's that extra penny per kilowatt hour that we were talking about earlier. The customer is also being credited. And then we have 17, the net charges. This is just a sum of the earlier charges there, or in this case, credits. Energy commission surcharge, also pretty standard. And then 19, we have the credited to NEM balance. So this is showing what the customer is adding to their rolling NEM balance, their month-to-month NEM balance here. So this customer is able to add $12.42. And then for 20, we've got the total balance. So this is including other balances from previous months. And then we've got how much RCA is charging the customer. In this case, this customer is being charged nothing by us because they have these excellent credits from previous months and then produced more than they used this month. So I know that was a lot. I just want to say thank you so much for sticking with that. I know it's not the most exciting topic, But I recognize that billing for net energy metering can be really difficult. And I absolutely empathize with that. And this is not the last time that we can talk about it. We're happy to talk about it, you know, obviously in the question and answer period that we're going to have in just a second here. But you can always call us. You can always email us. You can email us at info@redwoodenergy.org. And obviously just go to our website if you didn't memorize that right now. So thanks for sticking with it on that. And I have one last piece of information, one last plug, as it were, before we go into the Q&A period. I want to recommend our Repower Plus program. So this is our program for customers to pay just a little bit more, an extra penny per kilowatt hour, to make sure that all of your energy that we procure on behalf of a customer is renewable. Now you're thinking, Mihaela, why do I need that when I'm going to have solar on my roof? Well, excellent question. Even if you have solar, unless you went all out and you've got a battery, you are producing energy during the day, and then at night you're using energy. So during the nighttime, we are still buying energy on your behalf. So if you choose to opt up to this 100% renewable option, all of the energy, even though it's being netted out, you know, it's still being bought. We can buy that from renewable resources. And then if you are less environmentally inclined and you have a financial motive, there's nothing wrong with that. Because this is a program where you pay a little bit extra, if you're a customer that produces more than you use, or just you produce a big chunk of what you use, we will pay you out at your rate. And so because we'll be adding an extra penny per kilowatt hour to this rate that we would be charging you, we would also be crediting you at that slightly higher rate. So it's an interesting way to add a little bit more to the way the system works for you. You know, and it's when I kind of thought it through, I was like, oh, that's a little bit of a loophole. But ultimately, that's what we're here to do. We want to encourage renewable energy in all the ways that we can. So that's an option to you as well. All right, folks. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your attention, and I appreciate you being willing to check this out in this webinar version. And so I think we can move on to the question and answer portion.
Thank you, Mihaela. That was a lot of good information. I think you guys answered a lot of questions along the way. But there are some interesting questions here. I hope you're not hearing the echo that I'm hearing. Robert has a good point, and it comes up often, is with everybody focusing on how they can generate their own electricity and move towards an electric household with all these solar panels, you know, should they start switching out all their appliances ahead of time before they get set up with solar panels? And on a bigger picture, what is the state of California going to do going forward to reach the climate goals? Are they going to be phasing out natural gas source appliances and pushing us onto electric anyway? I don't know which of you would like to tackle that.
This is Mike, and I'll take a crack at that one. You know, I heard a funny line at an efficiency conference that said, well, if you are going to switch all of your gas appliances to electric, resistance is futile. And I know Mihaela would like that. And what that goes back to is resistance heating elements are very inefficient, and it's not the way to go. Even if you are making solar, you're very likely going to run out of roof, you know. And another thing to think about, if you need to keep adding resistance heating electric loads. So old school electricity was generated by a very simple process that was inefficient. And newer electric technology is great. And we do recommend fuel switching if you're using heat pump technology. And so as an example, an old resistance water heater might be 80 to 90% efficient, and that sounds pretty good. Heat pump technology doesn't generate heat. It uses electricity to move heat from one environment to another. So let's say you do heat pump water heating. It's like running an air conditioner in reverse. And so just like you can pump all the heat out of a room and make it cool, you can pump all the heat out of the ambient air and pump it into a water tank and make the water hot. Now that technology has something called a coefficient of performance. It's not efficiency because, again, we're not creating heat. We're moving it around. But that coefficient of performance can be as high as 4 or 5, which is the equivalent of having 400 or 500% efficient appliance. And so, yes, we do. I believe in fuel switching. I think it's really great if you're using the right technology. But I'll go back to my old friend at the Energy Commission. Resistance is futile. So don't go back to old school electric resistance appliances. Another thing to remember is that our grid is green during parts of the day. And so, electric appliances right now about, maybe 40% or 50% of the time are running on the solar energy that we saw on our grid. And other clean sources of energy. As the state gets more and more to having all of our grid sources be renewable sources, then electric appliances are more and more appealing. Today, we're not quite there yet, but I do think it's the way we're going. I do not think the state's going to phase out fossil fuels as a matter of law. They're going to try to make the alternatives to it ever more appealing, economically.
Okay. Let me see. We have a question here. Might appeal to a lot of people. If your average monthly use of electricity is about 7,000, maybe that's not that average, kilowatt hours, what sort of system should you install to have a true net zero system? I thought that was 700 at first. 7,000 is a different story.
I did too. I saw that one. I read that question come in, so I had a second to do my back of the envelope calculation. So the average residential customer, and Mihaela can correct me on this, uses about 5,000 or 6,000 kilowatt hours a year, right? The average residence. So let's just say this was the average residence, and they were a little bit above average, and they use 7,000 kilowatt hours a year. Then that would take 5 or 6 kilowatts of solar to offset that. Now, if this is a commercial customer and they're using 7,000 kilowatt hours a month, then it's going to take about 60 or 70 kilowatt hours installed on your roof to offset that. Can't be exact because you need to know, whether this array is facing south and whether or not there's shading on the array. Is the roof pitch, of a flat or 30 degrees? So I could just give a ballpark figure. But again, if it's 7,000 a month, that will take about 65 kilowatts to 70 kilowatts of solar to offset that. But just to give the homeowners some reference point, if you were at 7,000 kilowatt hours a year, you wouldn't be that above average consumption, and it would take you about 5.5 kilowatts of solar to offset that.
Nice calculations. Thank you. You kind of touched on heat pumps a little bit there. And this Robert's also asking if in Eureka, is Eureka a good area for heat pump technology? Because in some climates, it's a neat technology because the temperature drops so low, they don't really work.
That is a really good question. And Robert's right. Once the temperature gets too low, the technology can't move the heat from one environment to another. And they are equipped with what I just mentioned, resistance heating elements to kind of make up that difference to close that gap. But what I know, and I'm not an expert on this technology, is that they can typically harvest heat from the ambient air down to about 36 degrees, so close to freezing. And then they will get a boost from a resistance element. And then if the units are stored somewhere like a garage, they may be able to go, below freezing ambient temperature and still be harvesting air from a not quite a conditioned space, but something like your garage. But there is a limit to that. And so it's a very good question. I still do think when you look at our heating degree days, which is the engineer's metric that they would look at, and look at what our heating loads are in Humboldt County, we have seen customers be very happy with this technology, and we've seen that this technology can provide meaningful space heat or water heat in our climate.
Okay, that's good. Let's see, we have a more technical question that maybe Mihaela can take on, but trying to wrap his head around the tier one and tier two rates. How much electricity do you have to generate to make up the difference between those two levels?
Well, it's going to depend. So I'm not going to be able to say that specifically, but what you can see is on your electricity bill, it will show you what your baseline allotment is. And so that will be how much you can use at tier one. I will mention though, I'm guessing, so this customer is talking about one of the older rates. And so if you're a customer who is moving on to solar pretty soon, if you're one of those folks, PG&E is going to require that you go over to a time of use rate. So it may end up being a moot point unless you've had a solar system for kind of a while and so you're grandfathered in. But I would recommend looking on your bill, and it should show you what that allotment is, and you can kind of get a sense of how many kilowatt hours you need to move down. I would also say that, I think that's probably the best way to go. If for some reason you already have solar, so you're already grandfathered into an older rate, and then you can kind of add more solar on. So if I think that would be the scenario where that would make sense to me.
Okay. Thank you. This question came in, I think, when we are on about page 6. Vanessa, I think, is still with us. She was wondering, why is there a question on that, on page 6, maybe, about electric heating? Could have been page 5.
So the electric heating question is they're trying to figure out what your baseline for those tiers of electricity are. And when they had tiered rates, they would say you would get a bigger allowance if you had electric space heating versus a customer who did not. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mihaela, but that's how I remember that working under the tiered system.
You're absolutely right. Sorry, I didn't quite follow that. I got it now. Yes, you're
Well, we've saved a kind of more creative question for last, unless we get any more questions, but well, maybe there is another question. But what about DIY projects, contracting the parts on your own with certified electricians and installers?
You know, I think that Humboldt County is a place to ask that question. And for sure, someone's, you know, probably going to go that route. The systems are significantly complex, but you already mentioned working with certified electricians and installers. So I think you've got that part, the right idea there. You know, I used to work for an electrical contractor, and we just kind of had the simplest of simple rules of thumb that, you know, half the cost is your materials and half is labor. So I don't know if that helps you. If you're doing some of the work yourself, you're going to reduce some of those labor costs. You might get materials a little less expensive, but contractors also get great pricing when they buy the materials. And lots of things to look out for, like making sure all the things you buy are compatible with one another, because you might get great pricing on something that just doesn't talk to or share the same language as another component. So, you know, there's definitely pitfalls, but I think there is money to be saved there, especially on, you know, the roofing part of solar. Solar, there's a lot of time on a roof, and you're up there installing mechanical parts and with nuts and bolts. But I think that, you know, I really want to refocus on the idea of working with certified electricians and installers. That's a really important part of the process, as well as, you know, trying to save money.
Okay. our best bet to guaranteeing some success in the process, always working with professionals. It's a touchy subject, and it's even like the billing is so confusing, I think so is the process of installation and figuring out what your needs are and how to address those. Vanessa had another good question. I guess it was at our presentation. Is the average kilowatt hour usage that we gave for a house that's all electric and no gas at all, or was that a mix?
That's a mix of all residential customers in Humboldt County. So the average for residential customers is right around 500 kilowatt hours per month.
And Robert had a question. They've had solar since November, and they don't see time of day rates on their bill. Should they contact PG&E about this, or can we help them directly on this?
Yeah. Why don't you send us an email? My email is right there on the page, on the screen right now. Or you can give us a call. That works really nicely. One thing that I'll mention is if you are sending emails, don't send your account number in an email. It's a particularly sensitive piece of information. And so, you know, we can get on the phone, and that's the more reasonable way to transmit that sensitive information. But since emails can potentially be intercepted, we just ask that we are kind of vague over email, and then we get into the specifics on the phone call.
That is good. Thanks for making that point. Mike, this would be a good question for you. For those looking, investigate micro inverters. They're great for extending solar.
Here, let me unmute myself. Yes. No, micro inverters are one type. They get installed right at the roof level with each individual solar panel. There's a panel level inverter. And the commenter is absolutely right that they are great for expanding in the future. They're great for a couple of things. They're really great if you have shading on one small part of the array, or if you have maybe you have a roof that you want to put a little bit of solar east facing, a little bit west facing, and a little bit south facing. Those inverters handle those kinds of situations really well, and they are expandable. The downside is cost, and so everything's got its advantages and disadvantages. I'm at technology agnostic when it comes to central inverters versus micro inverters, but I do think that expandability is one of the big benefits of micro inverters, so I think that's a great point.
Yeah. Robert also has a good question about in the preparation for array, do we have energy efficiency experts that will go on out and make recommendations? This is also complicated by the pandemic and some stay-at-home orders and distancing, but maybe we're loosening up on that a little bit more as well for some of those types of services.
Yeah, and everybody at RCEA may know, but I will tell the public, we are working on our customer-facing policy for how we could get back out into the field to do our field work and do those kinds of things. We have energy efficiency services for both residential and business customers, and one thing that I think can still happen is that we were doing residential efficiency assessments over the phone already, and so one of our experts, Mike Bishop, would do a very in-depth interview with the customer. Mike is, you know, a Building Performance Institute certified technician, and then he kind of makes up this energy efficiency kit for the homeowner, and we make that available. Even now, I think Mike's still doing that, and the box is just put out in our waiting area, and a customer can still come pick that up. So, and you get to consult with him on the phone. And until we can roll our services back out in public, I would encourage Robert to call and ask for the residential efficiency assessment and a residential efficiency kit from RCEA.
Well said, yes. And our residential kits were real popular this spring, I guess this winter. For Valentine's Day, we had maybe 60 or more people come in and order or pick up components of that, and scheduled some follow-up appointments to discuss their personal needs at their house, and we're really happy to continue with that. And as the year rolls out, we're going to be able to provide additional services to both residences and businesses. Well, does anybody else have any more questions? We have cleared the queue here. Looks like we've done a pretty good job, or you're going to get some more personal inquiries to go over individual bills, which we encourage people to do, as Mihaela has pointed out. Some of these are better addressed one-on-one. Mihaela or Mike, do you have any additional comments?
I mean, I'd like to say thanks to everybody for attending this evening. I really appreciate everyone coming out on a weeknight to hear us talk. And just extend that same invitation out to please reach out to our information, email and ask questions. You can reach out to our office, and if you have solar questions or storage questions, they'll probably get shunted over to me, but we always want to help. And if you have bill questions, those will go over to Mihaela. We'll try to get the right person to help you, answer your questions. And that's it. Just thanks for your time, everyone.
Absolutely. We really appreciate your attention, and spread the good word. If there are more people in your lives who are interested in solar or have questions, send them to us. We're happy to talk to them. Have a great night, folks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Yeah. And if anybody wants to give us a shout out on even on social media, it's kind of nice to hear back from people. If you want to give us a thumbs up or write us a little review, that is meaningful as well. We're sorry we don't get to see everybody this summer at all the events, but do be in touch. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Right, good night.